Good morning.
Good morning, Phil.
Welcome to the morning show, the Tuesday morning edition with hosts Phil Huff and Julie Calamine on this rainy Tuesday. But I guess that's been in the forecast for some time.
We have known about it, but it doesn't mean we have to like it.
Spring is springing. Everything's breaking up in our yard. The daffodils are even starting to come up where the ground's slightly warm above the septic.
I was talking to Lori before we began the broadcast, and we both have noticed that skunk cabbage are starting to grow in the wet, low spots.
So if you haven't looked outside your window, it is raining right now. 100% chance. I think that's safe if it's actually raining. But it's 100% chance today, tonight, tomorrow. In fact, there's flood warnings until 9:30 p.m. Thursday. The good news is at least it's warming up a little bit. Highs right around 48 to 50 degrees. Overnight lows are not dipping back down into the freezing zone. So spring is springing.
True, but there is still some more skiing for those of us who enjoy that. Don't forget about skiing until the middle of April.
Spring skiing, it's probably a little bit heavier snow.
A little slushier.
So we're going to talk about all things natural this morning with the master naturalists we have in the studios with us today, Clem Yonkers and Lori Goetz from the Ponderay chapter of the Idaho Master Naturalists. And I'm going to let you describe what you do with each of them and what your titles are. So let's start there, Clem.
Well, good morning, Phil, and happy polling day and pie day. I had pie to get day. That in.
Yes.
There you go. Everyone needs to remember to vote today.
That's because it's 3.14.
Four, 2.9 or something. I can only get four digits out there. Yeah. Anyway, yes, I'm the president of the local chapter here, the Ponderay chapter of the Idaho Master Naturalists. And my wife, who's with me, she's the former secretary and also a board member. And the Master Naturalists, I guess the simplest way to put it, we're trying to develop a group or cadre of people of similar interests that are involved with the stewardship of Idaho's natural resources. So we're like a broad generalist group.
Yes, mm-hmm. I was reading the definition of naturalist in the dictionary this morning, and one of the definitions is a person who studies plants and animals as they live in nature. Is that pretty close?
Yes, our membership, to be a certified member of the Master Naturalist, we ask our members to take 40 hours worth of classwork that we provide and also then give back 40 hours to the community of volunteering efforts. And so, and our syllabus for our courses are geology, plants, mammals, reptiles, fish. So we usually have lectures and courses throughout the year in all those areas. So that's a pretty good definition.
So you're the Ponderay chapter, then there must be other chapters here in the state of Idaho.
Yeah, I think there's maybe 7 or 8 active chapters. I have a list here. We have about 30 to 35 members. Some of the groups are larger, other groups are smaller. We have, this year we're going to have a state rendezvous, I think somewhere in McCall, if I'm right on that. 2 years ago, we had it at Henry's Fork at the state park there, where we get together with our fellow master naturalists throughout the state and interact and get some more training and talk about other things. So yeah, there's active chapters throughout the state. There's also active chapters throughout the nation and other states too.
And do you ever get together with those folks?
We haven't so far, but there's been, we're starting to see some calls through our Boise office. Mm-hmm. Sarah Folks, our Boise coordinator for the state naturalists. And she sometimes, they're asking for information on different areas, different projects that they see if we can contribute to through citizen science efforts.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I find so interesting about it is that you're it's really a national movement. There's master naturalists all over the country, and yet you're so local in your work, aren't you? You're really just in your one tiny spot here working on the area.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. But our little tiny spot here has a lot going on. I mean, we're if you just are interested in the trees, I mean, we're sort of that remnant, that geological remnant of the rainforest from the coast that's here. So that's very unusual. We have the lake, one of the deepest lakes in the U.S. So we have different fish populations, et cetera. So, yeah, there's a lot that we can learn here, but also can spread in terms of nation, you know, it might be interested in things that go on here too. So
give us a little bit of the history of how the chapter got started here and What was the emphasis for that?
Well, it started in 2011. Lori can correct me on this. She's quiet over here. But it was a group of interested people got together and knew that the other chapters in the state had been developed. This interested group of people formed a committee and went to the Fish and Game Office here in Coeur d'Alene and said, we'd like to have a chapter. So they said, no, well, let's try to pull it together. And so they set up the class schedule for that first 2011. They interviewed potential members, and the rest is history. We've had the chapter essentially viable since 2011 from that initial committee and efforts by the Fish and Game Coordinator, Outreach Coordinator.
So tell us a little bit about that. Are all of the chapters associated with Fish and Game? What's the relationship there?
I think all of the chapters in Idaho are associated with Idaho Fish and Game. They are our main sponsor. However, we have agreements with many other volunteer organizations in the area, including the Friends of Scotchman Peaks, the Kanisku Land Trust, the Trout Unlimited, the Friends of the Bay Trail, the Kinnickinnick Native Plant Society, and there's many more.
And are those agreements for education, for projects? What kinds of agreements are they?
We like to be able to use our volunteer hours, both within our organization for Fish and Game and for the Wildlife Discovery Center, as well as within these other organizations. So if I go and stuff envelopes for the KLT, Kanisku Land Trust, that counts as volunteer hours for my Master Naturalist work.
And so those relationships are mostly about volunteer opportunities then. What about the educational component? Where are you drawing the resources from for instruction?
Most of our instructors are from Idaho Fish and Game. We also have a few from the BLM and from the local extension, county extension office for forest services. And we also count things like the meetings that the Kanisku Land Trust puts on monthly.
Yeah, the native plants.
The native plant folks.
Well, that great sources for education, so I imagine you're getting people who really know what they're talking about.
Yeah. I mean, I sort of give a little talk to the new classes, and unlike some of the nonprofits in the area, we're very broadly generalized. We don't raise money for any issues. Sometimes our members will say, do I have to get involved with raising money? It's like, no, we pay a dues. We have a fish feeder at the Wildlife Discovery Center that's our main fundraiser for feeding the trout.
Oh, where people
in the pond.
Drop money into
the
feeder.
Oh, in the summer. Yeah, it's amazing how much money we can make.
So the membership dues are able to cover the essential cost of the instruction?
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit more about that curriculum. How often does it occur? How long a commitment? What does the series of classes look like?
Well, right now we're starting our class for this year. We're running a little bit different type of schedule. In the past, we've scheduled a class every week for like 12 weeks to get their 40 hours, roughly. If you added it up, that would be about 48 hours worth of classroom schedule. This year, we're going... because we try to be flexible for potential members, and we know some people work and want to be members. Not everyone's retired the way Lori and I are. So we're holding it throughout the year, throughout the 12 months, usually one class a month. We just had one from a professor in Pocatello at Idaho State University. Trying to remember his name, Charles Peterson, Chuck Peterson. He taught us about the iNaturalist app for your iPhone, where you can just go and take a picture of something and enter it into the database, and then experts throughout maybe the country, certainly in Idaho, will try to identify it. And so that was our first class we had. We have one coming up in April from... a lecturer that's been involved with Britta Olson, who's the coordinator of the Lower Clark Fork Watershed, is going to talk to us about restoration of the Bull River. And these are out at the Wildlife Discovery Center. The next one's April 8th at 9:30 at the Wildlife Discovery Center. We do try to keep everything up to date on our website, and Lori can talk more about that because she's our coordinator that keeps the website up to date.
So these aren't open to the public, though. You have to be enrolled in the program?
We're trying to open them up to the public. If the public's interested in coming, yes. So our students certainly are supposed to come to that if they're able to. If not, they can catch other lectures throughout the year at the Native Plant Society or at the library. There's lectures. So, yeah, and we're going to try to open it up to be a little bit more inclusive to the public. So. Mm-hmm. You got anything to add, Lori?
The last class that we had with Dr. Peterson was well attended. He talked to us specifically on the iNaturals app about spotting reptiles and amphibians. Hmm. And you don't think much about reptiles and amphibians in northern Idaho, but we do have turtles, snakes, skinks, salamanders, and frogs. And they're trying to get a handle on where those are located. And there's lots of information on it in the iNaturals app, and I have information on that on our website, which is?
Yes, the website.
www.idahomasternaturalist.org. It's all lowercase, no spaces. And we'll say that again later in the show.
Oh, probably a couple times.
Yes.
And if I try to tell our members, that's the most current information. So I'll say it for the public, too. We keep that up to date rigorously, Lori does. And so it has the most current information of either classes or other things of interest for the public that might be happening.
Once you get to that website, you'll find us on the left-hand column. You click on the Sandpoint, Idaho link. You'll get into our announcements. And then again on the left side, you can look at the calendar and our minutes from our meetings are there, as well as more information from both the state and local.
Sounds like an easy website for once. Good.
So folks who enroll in the program then spend 40 hours of instruction. At the end of it, they become a master naturalist, or are there other steps they need to take?
There's some other steps, yeah. I mean, we ask our membership to take at least 40 hours of classwork, classroom investigation. After that, for a calendar year, we ask for 40 hours of volunteer time in any of these areas, either with fishing game or these other organizations that we mentioned. We have memorandums of understanding with those organizations. So if you volunteer for, say, the Native Plant Society and go work out at their arboretum, you also can credit that for your volunteer time for the Master Naturalist. Or we have people that help build trails for the Friends of Scotchman Peaks. So we have this reciprocity. When they volunteer for other organizations, they also count their hours towards us. So that's what we ask for a new member. Our continuing members, we ask for 40 hours of volunteer effort every year. And 8 hours of continuing education to be, as we call, certified. Now, you don't have to be certified to come and volunteer and interact with us and work with us. We have a lot of continuing members that for some reason or another, they couldn't do 8 hours of continuing ed or get total 40 hours, but they're still members. They still come and interact, help out at the Waterlife Discovery Center, volunteer for other organizations. So we're really flexible in that. You can be certified or you can be a master naturalist.
But do they learn the secret handshake?
I don't know if I know it yet.
Yeah. I would call them members in good standing.
Yeah.
Certified members who make the 40 and the educational requirements. And then there's just other members that are kind of silent members. They pay their $10 and we never really see them. They're doing things out there. They elect not to put their hours out on our website, so we don't know what they're doing. But they're still our members. Once they go through the training, they're our members.
And that's a good thing. The world needs more master naturalists.
Right.
If you're just tuning in, this is 88.5 KRFY, listener-supported radio for North Idaho. And this morning, we have in the studio with us Clem Yonker and Lori Guest from the Idaho Master Naturalists. And we're talking about the natural world.
Their work in it.
Yeah.
And we're also talking about making sure that you get out and vote today, and it is Pi Day, so a few things going on today. I'd like to find out how you're similar or different from some of the other master programs in the area. We have master gardeners, master foresters. Are they all sort of a similar program, just more focused in on plants?
Yeah, I think, you know, we're sort of comparable to the other programs where they might focus on gardening or the forestry. In fact, Chris Schnempf, who's involved with the Master Forest Stewards program, he comes and teaches our forestry short course almost for us. And he's on our schedule for July, I believe. And we're, as I was talking a little bit earlier, I mean, we're very broad. We're interested in the stewardship of Idaho's natural resources. We don't raise money for anything. What I ask people for, our members, is their time. We ask for their sweat. We want them to go and volunteer. We want them to get involved with either the environment or other organizations. And that's what we ask.
So how did you both get involved? I'd like to hear a little bit more about what your personal interest is.
Oh, Lori wants to cover that.
Well, when we moved here, we retired from the desert, from the Tri-Cities area of Washington, and we moved to North Idaho, a very different place. We bought 10 acres in the woods. We wanted to know, what were our trees? How are we supposed to care for them? What's in the understory? What are those mushrooms that are growing in the spring and the fall? What are those berries on those plants? There was so much we needed to learn. So we kind of put the word out to our friends that we wanted to get involved in something that would help us learn.
You wanted to be persons who studied plants and animals as they live in nature, a definition of a naturalist.
Absolutely.
That's about it.
And, you know, I think that's typical probably of listeners. I mean, as we go out, your listeners, I should say, no, as we go out in the community, like, having wine Friday nights at the winery. You know, a lot of people aren't natives here. They've moved in like we did. Mm-hmm. And because we came from a different environment, we're very interested in trying to learn what was North Idaho, why was it special. And as now we've been here long enough, we know why it's special.
So you moved here, you bought some land, decided you wanted to know more about the mushrooms and the trees, and the idea just went like a light bulb over your head, or you're talking to some other people and there's some energy in the room. Where was the genesis?
I've got to get in a plug here for Jan Griffiths. She was a friend of ours when we first moved here and helped babysit our cats and that on our house and that type of thing. And she knew that we were interested in this, and she was on the committee to help put the Master Naturalist together, along with lots of other local people. And then the fish and game folks that we work with. And she called us right away and said, you guys might be interested in doing this. And sure enough, we joined the first class. We had about 16, 18 in our first class. It's gone down from there every year. We find mostly retired people do join us. We try to encourage other people, younger people, to join us. It is difficult because of the time, but we are very flexible.
Yeah, and a change to monthly educational programs, I would think, would make a difference.
Oh, we hope so, yeah.
That's right.
I mean, it makes for a loose schedule. We can't say, you know, this is specifically when everybody's going to be talking. But that's why our website that we were chatting about is so important, because we will have those updates on there.
So it's not on a regular basis, like the third Thursday or something?
No,
just whenever
not
you can schedule.
We have in the past, and for a small organization, you're always shuttling between these different options and from a set time period for the classes to a loose schedule. That's new for us, so we'll try it and see if our membership likes that better.
Once again, that website is www.idahomasternaturalist.org.
Well, I'm curious to find out if you did learn everything about your 10 acres.
No, you know, that's one of the sort of the standing jokes our members have after they take the class, and then we're supposed to volunteer. And they really get intimidated by that, because they say, if I go out to the public, I just know enough to be wrong almost, you know, because there's so much to learn. So we sort of, our classes are more generalized, like say if it's about plants, it'll be very general on the plants. But then if we hope we just spark that little interest in, from our membership, and they'll go deeper then.
Yeah.
So they'll really go deep and learn if that's where their interests lie, or if it's with mammals or fish.
Like so many things, the more you learn, the more you realize how little you really know. So,
about our property, we did find out that we have white pine on our property, which we really didn't know about before. And we have some really nice white pine. And there is a disease that spreads, the rust.
Pine.
Right, the blister rust.
Yeah, white pine blister rust. And we found out that there are things that we can do to help protect those white pines. So we've kind of gone through our property, done a little inventory of where those trees are, and we try to keep an eye on them and see which ones are catching the rust and which ones aren't.
Yeah, and getting the other plants that help spread it out of there, right? Mm-hmm. Right.
It's so it has some real-world applications.
Oh, it does. And that was one of the direct things from our lecturer, Chris Schnemp, told us that we had no idea. You can prune them up and help increase their survival rate. So Lori goes out in the summer and does Zen pruning on the trees.
Yeah, I've got the coolest little electric chainsaw that I use, and it's my snippers. But it's not hard once you figure out what you need to do.
I say anytime you have a reason to get more lawn implements, all the better, right? Gives you more reasons.
Well, if you haven't already, you'll probably be ripping the lawn up and replacing it with something else.
We don't really have a lawn. The forest grows right up to the edge of our property. We don't have enough sunshine for a garden, so we like to support the local gardening and farmers markets.
There you go.
And we hang flowers instead of trying to plant them, because then the deer eat them all.
And then you have more time to get out and study nature.
So tell us about the classes. Are all at the Wildlife Discovery Center?
Not all.
Okay.
Actually, we have one coming up with the folks up at the Kootenai Wildlife Refuge up in Bonners. We're going to do a bird watching, and the instructor, Carrie Hugo, is from the BLM. She's very good about birds. She can even call them to her with the sounds from her app on her radio.
And what's the date on that?
That's going to be June 9th at 9 a.m.
Okay. With a focus on bird song, correct?
A focus on finding birds and listening for birds and trying to identify them by what you hear.
The Wildlife Discovery Center, though, is a place adopted by the Master Naturalist. There's a formal agreement or informal agreement to run it?
It's basically our headquarters, and that's located at the old fish hatchery in Sagal on Lakeshore Drive. I think the current address is 1591 Lakeshore Drive.
Were you involved in getting it organized, or did you come along after it had already been up and running?
We, personally, Lori and I, came along after it was up and running. Now, that building and the area was established as a hatchery in about 1909. And in the mid-70s or so, it's no longer used as a hatchery because the water coming out of the springs in the hills behind the Wildlife Discovery Center was too cold. So it wasn't an efficient process for raising fish. And that's why they started building the ones out at Springy Creek and then ultimately Cabinet Gorge. So Idaho, this I find interesting, so I'm going to digress. There's no state taxes given to Idaho Fish and Game. All their money comes from either licenses or grants and federal monies. There is no state tax money that goes to fishing game. So that's a plug for buying your fishing license or your hunting license, or making the little check on your box on your state income tax for non-game animals, because that money goes and stays with the fishing game. They don't get anything from the state. So Idaho, the fishing game is always looking at how can they operate most efficiently. That parcel of land was not being used. They were going to surplus that land. They were thinking about maybe selling it. And of course, if it was sold, it would be lost to the public as public access. The community didn't want that, so they started talking with fishing game what could be done. That's when the idea of the Wildlife Discovery Center came about. A facility that would be used to teach the public about water resources, wetlands, environment, and why those are important. So That facility has been, the building was developed into the, it was the hatchery manager's living quarters. So they had to do some redevelopment of that for a learning center for the public. It was completely empty. There were no exhibits, nothing in it. From up until 2014, we got a grant from the Idaho Department, well, Idaho Fish and Wildlife Foundation, mm-hmm. for $5,000 to develop educational exhibits for the public. We have essentially finished those now about 6 months ago.
It
was the Master Naturalist and the volunteers of people volunteering with the Master Naturalist. Mm-hmm. Before, the development of the grounds was done by a lot of the community. And there's signs recognizing, yeah. who in the community gave money or time to put in the stream and the pond, the observation pond, which we have, so you can see fish and,
yeah, I know,
et cetera.
The Native Plant Society started a landscaping project about 10 years ago around, mm-hmm. the pond to replace weeds with natives. And, mm-hmm. I remember a few backbreaking hours in the sun pulling weeds that would just, yeah. come right back. But
yeah, we do that now.
And at that, mm-hmm. time, the building was not in a good state. Other folks started working on the building and turning it into a classroom. Mm-hmm.
And so now I would welcome the public to come. We have naturalist docents. There are members that volunteer during the summer there. We have, that building is open on Thursdays, Fridays, Saturdays, and Mondays from 12 to 4. And we have volunteer naturalists on duty, as we call them, to greet the public, answer their questions. And those are during the summer months, June, July, and August. We don't have the ability to staff that other than those 3 months. And I should say, last year was the first time we kept total. And we had, it was open for 46 days last year, and we had over 672 visitors. That's pretty good. And we don't advertise really to the public. We try to get out information in Sandpoint Online or our website that it's open, but we don't, it's probably the most unknown resource here in the area. It's really nice.
Would you say that's where most of the master naturalists put in their volunteer hours, or not necessarily?
Yes, we ask out of that 40 hours that about 20 of that goes into the Wildlife Discovery Center, or WDC as we call it, because it is a big effort to greet and be available to the public. But a lot of it goes into plant monitoring for fish and game. Lori and I have done the kokanee spawning over in the Sullivan Springs area for both getting the eggs in the fall, putting the fry back in the spring. There's Native Plant Society. There's a lot of other volunteer efforts, but most of, yeah. it is with the WDC.
It's a wonderful facility, and often forgot are the 5 acres on the south side of the road with the Naturalist Trail.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. Yeah, it is a great facility. The exhibits inside are geared towards families, children. We built a little log cabin to make it look like the naturalist's or the fish manager's cabin back in the 1900s, maybe. And we do have trails across the lake shore, too.
We're going to take a short music break here. We're going to take a short musical break here. Listen to the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, Fishing in the Dark, and then we'll be back and hear a little bit more from Clem and Lori. The Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, Fishing in the Dark, which, is that as productive as fishing in the daylight?
I don't know. I don't catch fish in time period, so I don't know.
Yeah, Julie, you are a fisher person.
I don't know. It's dark and slippery. I get wet, and it doesn't seem to be the best time for me.
But do they bite more?
It's possible, but those who are out more would know more about that. I'm kind of a daytime, yeah. fisherman.
So if you're swimming, just tuning in, this is 88.5 KRFY, listener-supported radio for North Idaho. We're back with Master Naturalists Clem Yonker and Lori Goetz. We want to hear more about all the various programs that you guys engage in.
I'll let Lori talk about that.
Oh, there's so many projects. Besides everything that we do at the Wildlife Discovery Center, many of our members are involved in Idaho fish and game projects, including the Clark Fork Delta. And that entails so many different things. They're looking for people to monitor animals and plants. They're looking for people to go out and plant plants, to use the area. They have a whole website as well that you should be able to find really easy by just Googling the Clark Fork Delta.
That's a big project. You could probably use all your master naturalists there and still have more to do.
Well, there's a lot of master naturalists that will go out and do the sweat equity, but there's some of us that aren't quite up to that anymore. So we like to go and stuff envelopes or work on websites or, you know, put in the iNaturalist website, observations, go out and walk or hike, but maybe not too strenuously.
So there's a lot of different things a master naturalist can do.
Tell us about some more of those projects.
We are hoping to get some more people involved or to at least help the Trestle Creek Kokanee viewing. If you're not familiar with that, in the fall, the kokanee from the lake go up Trestle Creek and you can see them in the lake, in the stream, because they are red. They turn beautiful red, and this is in September and October. A lot of people go out there to the old area that Avista used to keep as a day area, and we've approached the Fish and Game and Avista about perhaps turning that into more of an interpretive area and staffing it.
Oh, Trestle Creek.
Trestle Creek, over nice. By Hope.
Yeah, and that, if I could add, that'll be a new project if it happens. Like I said, we're in talks right now with Avista and Fish and Game and hoping to get that off the ground this year. But some of the other projects we have, you know, there's two ways to go into Master Naturalist. You can go into either citizen science or the educational outreach opportunity. Citizen science, we're sort of talking about more citizen science projects because that's what Lori and I are involved in. But the educational outreach, we have the students come in, I think fourth grade students come in May. It's coming up to the WDC, the Waterlife Discovery Center, where they're taught about fish species, the environment around in the lake, bull trout, etc. And I think most of the students from the area in fourth grade come into those classes. So that's like public outreach. Citizen science, we have people that go out with Friends of Scotchman Peaks for weed monitoring in the treasured landscape area. We also have trail builders working on the new part of the start of the Scotchman Peaks Trail.
There's also another one called Monarch and Milkweed Monitoring. And that's been set out to us from the state. We don't get very many monarchs up in Boundary in Bonner County.
I'm not sure I've ever seen a monarch here yet. I've lived here 2 years and I was used to seeing quite a few. So, not many.
I don't know that I've seen many either. We do have some milkweed and milkweed seeds that have been passed around, and we're trying to encourage more milkweed, and then maybe we'll get more monarchs.
So if you see one, you need to take a photo and send it on this
the iNaturalist application.
Yeah. Phil, have you ever seen a monarch? You've been here longer.
Not locally.
No. Interesting.
But our milkweed took off where Phil was weeding so hard for 10 years ago. Now it's milkweeds.
Yeah, we've seen lots of milkweeds. Yeah.
Another program that we like to encourage is Ida H2O and the Waterkeepers, who do stream monitoring. There is a class for that coming up in mid-May that they are putting on. I can't remember the dates or the place yet. It will be on our website if you'd like to look that up. And they're going to teach you how to go out into a local stream and monitor the water quality.
What are they looking for, do you know? Or do you have to go to the class to find out?
I know, not specifically, but I know they're looking for water temperature, turbidity. They're looking for macro invertebrates in the water. They're looking for the depth and what the stones and pebbles look like in the bottom of the stream. So there's a lot of things to look for.
And they also do the lake monitoring program. Is that something the Master Naturalists participate in?
That is not something we've gotten into so far. But
I don't think we have any volunteers in that. More of our volunteers seem to be with Ida H2O, and they'll adopt a stream, as it's called, and they'll go out and monitor that stream throughout the year for multiple years and start getting that information into the database.
Do you look for plants and animals? Do you do any surveys of birds,
In the beginning, our first couple of years in, we did something called plant monitoring, and it was specifically set up with the Idaho Fish and Game. We worked with a couple of different officers, and we'd go out in the field at the local wildlife management areas. We'd stretch out a tape, and about every yard on that tape, we'd take note of what plants were growing in that particular spot. And we did it in a radius. And whether there was water or swamp or tall grass or trees, we'd write down everything that was on those spots on the tape.
So that's a great technique, too, to take home to your woods and investigate what's there.
It really is.
Does anyone ever come back to those same areas over time? Is that part of a plan?
Yeah, right now, those were 10-year monitoring studies. So we were coming back after 10 years. So they drive a central stake, do the GPS coordinates, and they go back either every 5 years or 10 years. We did have a project a couple years ago up at Hager Lake over in the Priest Lake area where it was a natural cranberry bog, and it had been monitored like 40 years ago. But the Fish and Game didn't have the resources to go back. We had a volunteer, Derek Antonelli, that was very interested in going back and monitoring the vegetation. And so we as a group, he coordinated that citizen science project, coordinated us as volunteers, and we went back and monitored that area about 2 years ago.
We found some really interesting plants in that bog. Even little fly traps and sundews that capture animals.
Wow.
Didn't know those existed here. That's very neat.
No, I didn't either.
And so it sounds like the volunteers can identify projects they want to be part of and go out and do that.
Exactly. I mean, we're driven by the wants, desires, knowledge of the volunteers. For example, Lori and I have a bluebird trail that we set up out at the Rapid Lightning Wildlife Management Area that we monitor every year. It's been going for now 4 years. We haven't had any bluebirds. We get a lot of swallows in there, but we see bluebirds through the area, so we're hoping that they'll use the nest boxes that we set up, but we don't have any yet.
So the only limit is your own curiosity. You can bring it to the Fish and Game and they're open.
Yeah, and really you don't even have to bring it to Fish and Game. You bring it to the board of this chapter, and we listen to you and we say, that sounds like a great project. Well, if we can help in any way, like they might need $50 for equipment or something, we try to facilitate that. So Fish and Game has a representative on a board. He really doesn't vote, he just listens. And so what's driven is by the acceptance of the board and by the membership.
So there's a relationship with Fish and Game, but you're not an official body of them.
No, we're representatives, but I don't know if we'd be called an official body.
However, there is a volunteer form that you do need to complete if you're going to be working with the Fish and Game on their official projects, because they cover you just like you're an employee, just in case you get hurt.
Right.
Good to know.
So people are listening, and I'm sure some are wanting to know more about, they might not have caught earlier, how can they enroll? How can they become a master naturalist in training?
Well, we left a few enrollment forms here at the station, so if people were interested, they can stop by. They could go on our website. We do have an email address, imn.sandpoint@gmail.com, and they could just inquire there, and that gets to Lori and myself. So there's lots of ways they could find out more information. And
can they start any time of the year, or do they need to wait for...
This time we're encouraging that, any time of the year. They could start volunteering right away or taking classes as we have these come up through the year. So, yeah, they could start at any time.
So you're saying that even if you haven't completed your 40 hours yet, you may begin volunteering?
Yes. We've the state guidelines maybe say they wouldn't like it that way, but we've decided we want to get people involved. And so we're more than happy to just let our people start volunteering right away. As we were talking amongst ourselves, I mean, we're not master naturalists. We know where we have to study and learn more, and it's a continuous learning development for us. So we don't know everything about everything. We might know who we could ask the question of to find out for the public, and we do that a lot, but we're always learning throughout the process.
So you're just pretty darn good naturalists.
Well, I wouldn't even add the pretty darn.
I think again, we are naturalists in training. One of our mentors has been an author from Spokane, Jack Nesbitt. He comes out often to this area, and I know that he's been sponsored by the Friends of Scotchman Peaks and by the Bonner Historical Society, as well as coming to some of our meetings. And he is a naturalist.
Yeah. Great author and naturalist. Yeah. Always inspiring and wonderful stories.
Very much so. Yeah. We really enjoy his books.
Who are some of the other instructors you had that you really like?
We have, a lot of them from Fish and Game. They're experts in their area. Kathy Cousins teaches our wetlands ecology. She was also involved in getting the grants to do the Pack River Delta and the Clark Fork Delta. We have Chris Schneff from the University of Idaho Extension Office, who teaches our forestry. Bill Love, who was involved, he's retired now, but he teaches the history of the local forest and family forests around the area. So we just have a lot of people with different expertise from the community that come in and enjoy teaching our classes when we can get them.
The other thing we also do is some of our members have really great backgrounds. There's a gentleman who's a hydrologist. We're going to have him teach some stuff. There's a woman who's a botanist. We have a lot of really good members, and we try to help them be members and build on their current knowledge and teach the rest of us their knowledge.
And one of the best ways to learn is through teaching.
Absolutely.
Hopefully they're listening, because they don't know that we're going to ask them to do that.
And are many of the class repeats from year to year, or do you add some new things in so that you're all getting some new?
We try to make sure that we have a good basic understanding of North Idaho with many basic classes, but we also try to change it up and do different electives. And this iNaturalist thing is brand new, and looking for amphibians. And I'm surprised how many you actually see. We even found a salamander in our garden one year.
I did too last spring.
It's a great program. We're running a little short here. If any last minute thoughts before we wrap things up?
No, it's just if the people are interested, please get involved.
Laurie, you might have a last minute thought.
Okay.
Get outside.
Everybody
get outside. We have a lot of local wildlife management areas that are not explored well. Get out there and see what we have.
Yeah, that's where the real learning takes place. Hands and knees on the ground.
So true. And your website, once again, for listeners?
It's www.idahomasternaturalist.org, or send us an email at imn.sandpoint@gmail.com.
It's a good time of the year to start thinking about becoming a pretty darn good naturalist.
It is. Thank you for coming in today, Clem and Laurie.
Thank you.
This is 88.5 KRFY Pondere. If you missed any of this broadcast and you'd like to hear more, you can listen to the podcast later on today or tomorrow. As always, you can hear us streaming. So if you're away next week, you can listen to us at www.krfy.org and click on the live streaming button. As we say goodbye to Clem and Laurie, we're going to take them out with another song. And coming up, we have the Art Garfunkel, Waters of March. Art Garfunkel, Waters of March, from his debut solo album, I believe, Breakaway.
Great song.
Yeah, it seems very appropriate today. We have a lot of waters this March.
Flooding waters of March.
And it fit in with the master naturalists who are out there, as we speak, probably monitoring the water quality.
In the fens, looking for reptiles.
Yeah. Welcome back. This is Phil and Julia with the Tuesday Morning Show. And speaking of morning shows, tomorrow morning, the March 15th Wednesday morning show with hosts Susie Perez and Jack Peterson is going to do a Wednesday stint. Their guests will be representatives from several local service organizations, the Community Assistance League and the Bonner County Human Rights Task Force, right here at 88.5 KRFY. Then Thursday, Jack is back on March 16th with the Thursday edition of the morning show. His local guest will be local author Tim Martin. Should be a good week.
Should be. And then the following Tuesday, you'll be hearing from me because Phil's going to be out of town. Phil, you got to hang around.
Got to go soak up some sun.
Oh, sounds fun. Well, you will be hearing from me, and I'll be chatting with Pat Stevens et al. That means two more guests yet to be determined, talking about Friends of the Library and some other aspects of their volunteer work.
It should be a great show.
Should be.
I'll try to catch you live streaming.
It should be a good show.
KRFY.org.
That's right.
So if you're in town tomorrow, it's the annual crew brew. Have a brew crew at Idaho Poor Authority. It's a benefit to raise money for KRFY. That's 5 to 8 p.m. at Idaho Poor Authority. If you've done one of those before, you know the drill. Show up, enjoy the camaraderie, have a beer, benefit the station.
Yes, so hold off on your beers today so you can drink quite a few for us tomorrow night. And ongoing events. We've already talked about this, but do remember, if you can, please vote on the levy. That's an important thing. On the 15th, we're going to be having a LEAP update for those of you who are loggers. That's a one-day workshop for loggers. It's a big event. 1,500 Idaho loggers will go to the University of, they've taken this class, and more will be going now, silviculture, water quality, getting the loggers some education about how to be careful with our environment. For more info on that, you can call 208-263-8511.
I think that's part of the Master Forest Stewards Program.
Is it? Great. So that's a connected educational program. And on the topic of plants, on the 15th, you can attend Growing Blueberries. That's by Patty and Fred Omot. Bonner County Gardeners Association is hosting a spring home horticulture workshop. That's from 6 to 8 p.m. on the 15th at the Pondere Event Center. For more info on that, you can call 208-265-2070.
And then there's St. Patrick's Day, Friday.
Very much so.
Celebrations everywhere.
This is true. I'll get to that in a moment. But before that, if you can make it, there are showing of Once Upon a Mattress is coming. It's the 16th through the 18th. And that is the, of course, we all know the Rodgers and Hammerstein musical, Once Upon a Mattress, showing at 7 p.m. on the in the evening, plus a 2 p.m. matinee on the 18th. That's at the Panada. And it's going to be a great show. So you might want to catch that. And for more info, you can call 208-267-1325. More, lots more to do. St. Patrick's Day, we've got tons going on. Let's just see the exciting ones we've got. One is going to be a fundraiser for Hank, 24 Hours for Hank. That's the 219. It's raising money not particularly for Hank, but for cystinosis research. For more information on that, you can get in touch with the 219 Bar. That's on St. Patty's Day.
The worse the disease is, the less easy it is to pronounce.
Boy, I don't even know what that
cystinosis.
One is. Cystinosis. You may also attend the St. Patty's Day Brewery Bash at McDuff's, and that's running all evening. Live music, you know, we all know the drill on St. Patty's. Music and beer, etc. There's also a fundraiser that night, First Presbyterian, and that's a fun-filled night with a sing-along of Irish melodies, accompanied by Bud Smith. And they're hoping you'll come and donate to that. The proceeds go to the Community Outreach Mission. Admission is by donation. 263-2047.
Well, we had a great show this morning. If you didn't get enough of your Master Naturalist, do check out the podcast here at www.krfy.org. You can listen to us live streaming via that, or you can tune in each and every Tuesday to hear Julie and I, or at least one of us, at 88.5 FM in Pondere.
That's right. What a great way to learn about the overall environment and not have to specialize quite yet.
We're going to go out with a little bit of Anya. This was a request by one of our Master Naturalists. Lori wanted to hear The Memory of Trees. So hopefully she's in her car now, tuning in and listening to Anya, The Memory of Trees. Until next week.
See you then.